Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Broadcasting from the ESPN Tallahassee studios in Florida's capital city and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, this is the Scuttle Bucks on 97.9 ESPN Radio. The Scuttle Bucks with Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years and home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Here's ESPN and Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
And away we go with the Scuttlebox. And an interesting one, aren't they all? This one shall be the Bucks. In dire need already of a win on a Thursday night. On the road, something that Jameis Winston has had a very, very hard time accomplishing. Franchise as a whole, not a lot has gone right. Not a lot went right on Sunday outside of a running game that developed and an improved defense. So I guess I shouldn't say all of what I just said. But the win, it was not garnered, and now the Bucks off on the wrong foot. Welcome in. Look back at that game. Look ahead at the Carolina game. And let's talk about this stat right off the bat. Jameis Winston has lost 12 road games in a row. That'll hurt your feelings. That's a dubious honor. Our friends at JoeBucksFan.com noting that former Texans quarterback David Carr lost 12 road starts in a row in 05 and 06. Lions quarterback Joey Harrington, 13 in a row on the road from 02 to 03. Vikings quarterback Dante Culpepper lost 14 in a row on the road from 2000 to 2002. And Jake Plummer, Jake the Snake, with Arizona, lost 10 straight on the road from 2000 to 2002. So not great company. Those were bad teams, something they all kind of have in common there, that it's not just the quarterbacks that struggled, but the teams as a whole who did a lot of losing, whether it was at home or on the road. And the Bucks have certainly done a lot of that.
Yeah, this was a really frustrating game for a lot of reasons. First of all, the way it finishes, and that's what's going to last in our minds if we think about this game years from now. But in the flow of it, it's a flag fest. This official crew, and I don't recognize the head official. It might have been his first game or he's early in his career. They wanted to leave their mark, didn't they?
Yeah.
Taking points off the board.
Twice.
Questionable calls down the field, pass interference, both ways. You know, the illegal downfield thing, I understand the offensive PI that the kill score comes off the board for. I see those plays, but a lot of them for both teams that you just go, guys, you're killing the flow of the game just to kill the flow of the game. Are you looking for camera time or are we looking to play some football around here?
Ticky tack stuff that really is pervasive throughout the league and very frustrating. It's become a league of penalties. This is a broader topic for a different time. About how it is the game is over-officiated and often ruined.
But it just added to the frustration. You know, turnovers will do that. When officials help, then it feels like you're watching 3 hours of hell. And I felt like that's what we were watching. And even though we're in control at halftime on the scoreboard, you're wondering, is this going to be a team, is the winner today going to be a team who loses the game the least, or is it going to be a group that takes the win away from the other? And I feel like both teams walk away saying, ugh, but San Francisco grabs an East Coast win, gets back home, and is happy to be 1-0. We've got a short week and obviously the quick turnaround for tomorrow night.
Well, it's tough because now you're in real danger of starting the season 0-2. It's a game that I think we thought if this team is going to get to 8 wins or somewhere in that neighborhood, they would need to win. It was a winnable game. You had a lot of elements that you questioned coming into the game working for you. You found a running game. You got something finally in that department. Your defense is vastly improved and provided you an opportunity to build a lead and to have a chance to salt the game away, and then it doesn't happen. And ultimately, turnovers are the cause of that. You know, I'm going to need O.J. Howard not to play as if he's the worst tight end in the league. He did so many things wrong so frequently that I had a hard time concentrating on the other factors that led to the loss. The first interception is right off his hands. He also fumbled the football inside. These are ways in which teams betray opportunity and betray their quarterback in that situation. Now, Jameis, in turn, later on, betrayed them with an asinine decision that a fifth-year starter cannot make on a busted screen that salts the game away. I know that Bruce Arians noted on the other two picks, obviously, that they weren't Jameis' fault. But at this point, nobody wants to hear that. And I suspect that as much, obviously, the one was the tip pass. And again, that's O.J. Howard. The other, it appeared to me that Barber had done something wrong. It was a rather aimless route on his part and too deep at that. And so I wondered. So now we have the answer, yeah. But it doesn't matter at this point. The decision at the end is not something you can do. And what's frustrating, Tom, is, again, you had those other things working for you. But I want to key in on something that I thought was interesting, and I can tell it reveals a level of frustration for Winston, and who wouldn't be after that game? And he knows, he's feeling the pressure and the heat, and he hears the conversation surrounding his time in Tampa and what he needs to be this year. And this is just one game. But when you hear him say, quote, unquote, telling reporters, we have to get open. We've just got to get open. Well, that is a deflection of responsibility. And obviously, you're calling out your wide receivers pretty directly in a way he usually does not do. Yep. Even when he is not at fault, he will take blame. That's not anything that people can accuse him of doing, right? He's not a guy that projects onto other people most of the time. He'll take it even when it's not his. I found that intriguing. A little disconcerting. Now, some of that might have to do with the fact that Evans was clearly sick and could not get open. He was never open. And that's a real problem since your most dynamic weapon on offense is Mike Evans. And he is a difference maker week in and week out. He was of no use in this football game. Howard played terribly, and you didn't see separation. It is true. So a lot of those windows were very tight because guys weren't separating, but you don't usually choose then to call them out in a press conference. That's not his MO.
Well, if that changes him into taskmaster quarterback Jameis, maybe that might be good, because whatever he was trying before doesn't work. I think the hard part on the screen pass, if you watch it, we've got three guys left in there to block, it looks like. Their job is not to leave, is to stay. You've got right guard, right tackle, and left tackle. And they all get destroyed on that play.
Yeah, totally.
And then the other two are vacating up the interior, or they're at least up the field a little bit. I don't know that he has a window to dirt the ball, but he either takes a sack or he throws it directly out of bounds and you take a grounding.
You got to do anything but what he did.
Correct. I don't know that there was an opportunity to throw the ball at the feet of the running back. I watched it 40 times on loop today.
Oh, it's a totally busted play.
I mean,
you would
Jesus.
Think it's a safe call. It makes me angry on a lot of levels that we can't execute a screen at an end-of-game scenario where you're trying to just get some rhythm, some yards on first down, and we can't execute it, whether it's the quarterback making the decision and the pick that ruins the opportunity to come back, or just the lack of execution across the board on a very simple play.
Right. And again, I'm not taking any blame away from Jameis for the decision to airmail a ball to an open spot in the field where his safety is laughing as he's putting as he's grabbing
it. Easiest score you'll ever have.
And in all honesty, if you look at this game, he's got three picks. On the surface, two of them are not his fault. One certainly is. He should have thrown another one in the first half on a third down when he gets hit. My concern here is I wonder if he's a little gun shy, and this is one reason. He's done this before, but it's the most noticeable it's ever been to me. He's in the gun, and he's taken five-step drops out of the gun. I mean, the drops are so deep. You can't – I mean, you're sacrificing what? It's almost like you're three-quarters of the way to where the punter would be before you're trying to throw the ball down the field. This is something I'm going to keep an eye on Thursday. It was never so noticeable to me as it was on Sunday, but he is taking three- and five-step drops out of the gun. And so he's already giving up how much space and an angle, how much time if he has a longer windup out of the pocket. It's just you have to be beyond precise if you're going to be that deep beyond the line of scrimmage to get the ball 10 to 15 yards down the field, let alone shot plays.
There's one definitive throw in which he stands tall, steps strong, and fires 25 yards down the field for a first down. I think it's a throw to Godwin in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only throw that I can remember the entire game from the pocket in which he executes with confidence. everything is almost cautionary, and you're right, tentative. The only time you saw him throw with authority, besides the one I just described, was when he was outside the pocket, where he typically leads the league in accuracy and production outside, especially rolling to his right. Those numbers are well documented. But outside of that, I saw a guy that looked nervous. I saw a guy that wasn't sure of what he was seeing. I saw a guy who didn't trust. I don't know if getting beat up against Cleveland, you know, which absolutely we all witnessed in the preseason, led to him not having any faith at all in that offensive line to be able to block it up, given the fact that this was a stout defensive line for the San Francisco 49ers. I don't know what it was, but your descriptor of a man who was unsure of himself and tentative is apt. And that surprised me because, again, you're at home. You established a running game. Your defense is keeping you in it. You're not having to throw the ball 45 to 50 times because you're trailing in the first quarter. That's not how this game played out. You do have some weapons. I'll grant you your marquee weapon was kind of down for the count with illness, obviously, but you got to be better than that. You got to look more confident than that. I don't know the answer there. I just know that, hey, listen, the narrative surrounding Jameis Winston is always that he throws too many interceptions or that he turns the ball over. And that's not entirely untrue. Obviously, the numbers bear that out. But oftentimes, it overshadows the good that he's done. But there was no way to pick him back up after this game, even if you were wanting to do so. And I'm an ardent supporter and a guy that I think has said numerous times that I believed Jameis would have a huge year this year, given the new coaching staff and what he has to work with. I was surprised to see what I saw on Sunday. It really did baffle me. I saw an unsure quarterback who looked nervous.
Well, I saw a good defense, too, for San Francisco. I think both of these teams played pretty well defensively. We had a couple of busts, and we could talk about the defense later because that's the bright spot in the game. Kittle's really hard to cover. And
apparently.
Well, this guy also is a – I mean, Kittle is one of the top three tight ends in the league.
Don't get me wrong. I know. I mean, they don't have any other weapons, but okay.
But they run a ton – I mean, it's like the Patriots, what they do. A ton of picks and rub routes, and you can't call them all. And they got us with a throwback pass early in the game. He drags across the formation as they roll right. I mean, all these misdirection ideas.
Shanahan's good.
Shanahan is a really good play caller. See what happened to Atlanta after he departed.
No, no. I think he's one of the best two or three in the league.
With all of the weapons that they had in Atlanta, the next year they were a gosh darn train wreck. I almost said something else.
Yeah.
And it was much to my delight, but it tells you how ridiculously talented that dude is at scheming people open, which is to our defense's credit that we played well. But the point is, on our side, our guys didn't get open. It's true. I mean, every single throw was contested.
He's not wrong. I just have a problem with him saying it. And I'm surprised he said it. And I think it speaks to something greater, which has me pretty concerned.
Well, the odd thing is, I feel like with the shoes on the other foot now, I'm happy he said it. It's about time he holds other people accountable. He's taken everything, every bullet for all of his teammates all the time. To no end.
Yeah.
And I get it. He's now the one who makes the ultimate mistake in the game. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to do it there, though, Tom. I get what you want to see from Jameis, and I'm fine with that because all of the great quarterbacks in the league are red asses that are forever yelling at their guys. I got you. They take control. Pick and choose when you're going to do that. It wouldn't have been after that throw in this game.
Right. It was his midweek availability. Did he say it on the Sunday dais as well? I know he said that when he talked to the media on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
And he said, you got to get open. It was in the middle of his comments as well. He had about a five-minute availability. Well, he was very short with the media, too, which good.
He's
good.
Frustrated. And look, he has to be. After that game, it doesn't do you any good to sit up there and prattle on about your frustrations. You want to get in, get out, and move on. He knows he had a bad game. He said it after the game. Listen, I'm not the guy that says it's a loss, it's a wash, we're screwed. I'm just saying this particular game stunned me to some extent. He didn't play well at all. He looked unsure of himself, and I'm just trying to figure out why. I'm just trying to figure out what it was that led him to be, and it was from the get-go, Tom. It was right out of the gate. Now, Godwin drops a first down on the opening drive on third down where Jameis buys time by rolling to his left.
He's looking for anybody.
Well, he throws it right between the numbers. Catch the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if early on those mistakes or those problems on the offense lead to doubt, I don't know.
There's throws to Perryman that we get an early first down on. There's hardly a window there, and he fires it into the left. There's a couple that it seems like defensive backs are triggering downhill on. It's almost like they had our plays with how close the coverage was the entirety of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the frustration about not getting open. That's where that stems from. You're not wrong on that. I watched this game start to finish. Of course, we all did. And I kept noting. I said to my friend that nobody's open here. This is not good.
Yeah, and I think a couple of the throws, too, that he made. One of note that Bruce talked about, I think it was Monday media availability. I think Bruce has spoken to the media Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. But the O.J. Howard interception, and there was a question about checkdowns, because if you freeze frame it when he delivers the ball to O.J., you've got two checkdowns on either side. And the question was, should he even have even put the ball there? And Bruce said, O.J.'s number one in the progression. He's open. Yes.
Catch the ball, man.
I need
O.J. to step up his game.
But just while we're watching.
He killed us.
We're watching for the checkdowns and things. And that's a nothing third and goal from forever away, because we get a penalty call on us. And that one I don't really like, because I think it might have been a hold, but it had no bearing on the play. It had no bearing on the play whatsoever. At any rate, that's a nothing third down that he fumbles on, because now you're just kind of, you might want to call a draw there in the future if you can't trust your receiver not to fumble the damn ball.
I'm going to want to trust my receiver.
But we're going to be on check down watch for Jameis for shot plays, and is it an ill-advised chance down the field? In that particular interception, on that particular play, no. O.J. was read number one, so Jameis did exactly as he was supposed to do.
He puts it on him.
And again, I'm not saying he played overwhelmingly well. I'm just saying there's a lot going on there. And for first games of the season, we beat New Orleans last week, week one. 2 years ago was week two because of the hurricane delay with Dolphins game being moved to our bye week, which was ridiculous. But we beat the tar out of the Chicago Bears. I think there's a little bit more to work with this year. If the receivers do get open, that defense looks like it can be something that carries us into a fourth quarter by itself.
And we developed a running game.
Yes,
and
we did.
I'm not hitting the panic button. It's an easy storyline to fall back on. It's a lazy storyline. It's also not completely inaccurate with the turnovers. So let's see where we go from here. But it's a tough turnaround now on the road against a good Carolina defense. I'm curious, and they'll be desperate too.
Well, one note to look at too, if you look at Goff's stats from this past weekend and you look at total attempts and the yards he threw for, they're eerily similar to Jameis. He's in the mid to upper 30s in passing attempts. He's under 200 yards passing. That's exactly what we saw from Jameis this weekend, so it might be that the running game has to lead the way again on a short week, and that's tough to do for how physical this league is.
Carry the day, going to have to. Our friends at Bill Curry Ford are not only collecting post-hurricane supplies for residents of the Bahamas at the dealership, they're ensuring that the relief supplies will get on a flight directly to the Bahamas to help meet the tremendous need. Drop off a donation by September the 16th at Bill Curry Ford at 5815 North Dale Mabry Highway, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. It's easy. Just toss your donation in the back of an F-150 that's all set up for donations in the Bill Curry Ford showroom. Sunscreen, trash bags, non-perishable food. A full list is posted at joebucksfan.com. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for nearly 60 years. More of the Scuttlebucks when we return.
Slip skirt. Jeannie never wears no slip skirts. I don't ever wear no rip shirts. Can't pretend I'm going on and never hurts.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
And there it is, the music that says my man, Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, joining us on the Scuttlebucks. One of these days, you're going to join us after a win, Lee.
Yeah, no kidding. The Van Halen music, Van Halen bumper music that put me in a good mood. And it was an ugly, ugly game, and an ugly game by franchise quarterback Jameis. But you know what? That's one game. There's 15 more to go. And you know what? I remember the Bucks winning the Super Bowl in 2002, and their first game under their first year coach John Gruden, old Chucky, was pretty lousy as well. So I'm not suggesting a Super Bowl, but I am suggesting the end is not near.
Yeah, they could certainly play better. It was frustrating partly because Jameis didn't play well, which is, of course, maddening, because they also received some things we were hoping to see, which was a running game and an improved defense, and they got both of those things. If you want to add to the mix of things that frustrate fans and frustrate players in a loss like this, you had suspect officiating, really, for both sides. I just thought it was poorly officiated across the board.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, just poorly done. I know Arians talked about that this week. In particular, the one holding call on Dotson's terrible. But there are numerous calls that go both ways that absolutely you just scratch your head at officials ruining the flow of a football game. And then, you know, Jameis's decision at the end of the game is inexplicable. I understand the play is blown up. It's a screen pass. Nothing goes right on the play at all. But if you have to, throw it in the stands, take your grounding penalty and survive and move on. I thought, obviously, the first interception is not his fault at all. O.J. Howard played about as bad a football game as a human being can play and did his quarterback no favors there. He also fumbled the ball. But then you found out later on the barber route that is poorly run. But I need Jameis to be better in general. I thought he looked unsure of himself. I was confused by that. I thought he was a guy that, played with trepidation. And I wasn't sure what was the reason for that. Again, some of the positive signs, they got the running game going. Now they're going to have to find a way to carry that over to the game against Carolina on short rest, or else you risk obviously going 0-2. Big picture, your takeaway this week after obviously being at the press conferences, your thoughts on what we saw on Sunday and then where we're going.
Well, you hope there's only one big issue here, and you hope that is you can be corrected. And there's a whole lot of people at One Buck Palace that are hoping the same thing. Get Jameis on the right track. But as you suggested earlier, the Bucs got a running game. Oh, my gosh, where'd that come from? The Bucs had a decent defense. That's what you were hoping for. And that, everybody says, well, you give Jameis a defense, give him a running game, he'll do well. He got the things that he needs. And unfortunately, it didn't translate into a decent game. The officiating, I completely agree with you with. I talked to DeMar Dotson right away after the game. And the first penalty that was called on him, that screen pass, that break, broke for a touchdown, he told me, because I have no idea what I did wrong. Because I swear I did everything right. Because I'll watch the film, I'll find out. But he said, I have no idea what I did wrong. And he swore up and down he wasn't holding. And in retrospect, it looks like that was just a really, really bad call. O.J. Howard, you bring up a good point. O.J. Howard, one of his greatest attributes, or strengths, I should say, is blocking. And when the Bucs played Cleveland in the preseason, he got blown up on a couple of blocks. And I thought, okay, it happens, even to the best of them, it's preseason. So what? Well, that continued into the season opener against San Francisco. So if people want, there's been sort of a groundswell with Bucs fans that want to trade Cameron Brate. And I sort of see why in a back. Brate can get draft picks. The Bucs are under, salary cap crunch. I get that. But I think Sunday we saw firsthand why the Bucs are keeping Brate. Brate was the best tight end on the roster Sunday, not O.J. Howard.
Yeah, and O.J. dropped the football, obviously, and a ball hit him right in the hands. He also fumbled. I mean, you just saw things from him in this game that absolutely are killers in those situations. And, it's frustrating. And, I do. What did Bruce Arians say about Jameis's play overall? I am kind of curious what his thoughts were about the game Jameis had, because he had to have been pretty surprised too. I think we all were by the fact that, look, Jameis is not a perfect quarterback. We get that. But he's not often lacking confidence. And I just saw a guy that looked timid, looked like he was unsure of what they were doing. Did you get a sense of that?
Yeah.
That struck me as odd.
I sort of got it. Well, first off, he was erratic throughout the game, Jameis was. Mm-hmm. I even put up on Twitter at some point in the first quarter, I said, bad Jameis today. And you could generally tell if it's going to be good Jameis or bad Jameis right away. You could usually tell. And, Sunday it was bad Jameis, and it didn't get much better. If you're reading between the lines, you're starting to get an idea of what Arians is trying to say, given his various press conferences, his appearance on NFL radio last night, or I should say Tuesday night. I get the sense that Jameis isn't yet comfortable with his offense. I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but he's not savvy with the offense yet. He's still, he's learning his way. And that, I think, is part of it. But also, I could say in training camp, Jameis didn't have his best training camp. And matter of fact, Jameis may have had his worst training camp in my eyes. I can only speak for myself. Now, last year, the year he started off the season suspended, I thought he was dynamite in training camp. I thought he was dynamite in preseason games. That carried over. And outside of one drive, the preseason opener at Pittsburgh, he only played one drive, he being Jameis. Outside of that one drive, he just hasn't looked that sharp. And you know what? What we saw Sunday is somewhat what I saw from Jameis in training camp. Now, whether that is he's still learning the offense, I'm not really sure, but Arians put out blunt hints about it. Last night on SiriusXM NFL Radio, he came out and said, to master this offense, it takes a couple of years. And Arians also added that right now, the offense is very generic. They're basing game plans off generic plays. And Arians said, we have a lot of generic plays. They're basing the game plan off generic plays to try to, you know, ease Jameis into learning the offense. Now, Arians also said, Bill Polian asked him, he goes, where was Jameis when you took over? Where was his mindset? Where do you think he was in his, development? And Arians said he knew Dirk Cutter's offense inside and out. And no one who's ever worked with Jameis suggests he doesn't get it as far as football IQ.
Football IQ is brilliant, yes.
Is off the charts. And I think that's what's so frustrating with for people with Jameis. Everybody at worst of them just raves about how intelligent the guy is. But for whatever reason, that doesn't always translate to the field. And I think if somehow somebody can figure out that riddle, whether it be Arians, whether it be Tom Moore, whomever, that's the key to Jameis. Figuring out that riddle, how he can be so smart in the classroom, on the practice field, and translate to the Sunday afternoon.
It's a great observation, Lee. I for people that are listeners of the Scuttlebox, and they don't hear the show that I do here in Tallahassee with Tom Lang, then maybe they don't know this, but I'll lend insight. You know, Jimbo Fisher, a brilliant offensive mind and a guy that understands really almost every kind of either formation or philosophy in football history. He'll tell you the origins of everything, a defense and offense, and why they developed the way that they had. He's absolutely brilliant in that way. He once told me early in Jameis's career that he had never coached a quarterback smarter than Jameis Winston. He had never been around a guy who had a greater football acumen or football IQ than Jameis Winston. That is apt. You know, people see the immaturity and the mistakes off the field, and they think, well, he must be a dumbass. He's not a dumbass. He's really smart.
No.
The problem is, you're right, though.
He had a scholarship to Stanford, right?
That's correct.
He went to medical school.
Right. The problem is that you're right. That doesn't always translate into smart play on the field, and so people see that, and they think he just isn't real bright. That's not true, and that is the frustrating part, is trying to figure out why that steep knowledge of the game of football and the inner workings of a play, a strategy, a philosophy, you name it, don't always translate. Now, it's early in this time with Arians, and we shall see. If they go out and win on Thursday, we're having a very different conversation next week. But at sure. the same time...
Well, and to be fair, Jeff, and this almost sounds like I'm pandering here, but to be fair, you know, Carson Palmer struggled with Arians' offense for the first half of the season. When he was traded, when the Cardinals obtained him in a trade from the Raiders, and he was a veteran, he had more seasons under his belt than Jameis, and Pro Bowls as well, and he struggled the first half of the season. So I mean, it sounds like I'm pandering, sounds like I'm making an excuse, but you know, I try to keep this in perspective. It's the first game, and every year in the NFL, I'm as guilty as anyone. It's called overreaction week one. Mm-hmm. We all overreact at week one. So I understand, you know, hey, I'm not making excuses. Jameis looked terrible Sunday. And if he has another terrible game, well, is that a pattern? But if he's still looking terrible toward the end of October, early November, then I think there's an issue.
Yeah, well, we'll start to panic, obviously. I mean, I think panic already sets in for Bucs fans who have such high hope with the new coaching staff, obviously. And then you roll out there with that dud on offense. How was the locker room on Sunday compared to other losses in the Dirk era? How did they hold up from a morale standpoint?
It was not a whole lot different. I won't out this guy, but there was a certain rookie. He was smiling too much for my liking in the locker room. It was like the loss didn't bother him at all. He was joking around, laughing, big smile on his face. I'm like, I'm not saying that rubbed me the wrong way, but it stuck out like a sore thumb. Let's put it that way. The players were frustrated. They were frustrated. Dotson especially. I talked to Dotson. I talked to Cam Braid as well, and you know, he was kind of like, "Geez, we had this game. We should have won." Braid wasn't ready to jump off the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. He was like, "You know, this stinks. We should have won the game. We let it go, but we can move on. We could do better." So he was taking it matter of factly. Dotson was frustrated because he doesn't know what he did wrong, and of course those were killer, absolutely killer penalties he had. Bucks beating Bucks is what Arians like to say. But the general mood was, damn it, we're making progress and we still lost, which is, they did. Like you mentioned right away in this interview, the Bucks had a defense, the Bucks had a running game, and yet they still lost. And so there was frustration. It wasn't anger. It wasn't throwing chairs. But it was like, you know, we lost, that stinks, but we're making progress. That sort of feel it had, the locker room, the atmosphere.
Out of curiosity, real quick, before we move forward here, anything we need to know going into this game against Carolina, something that perhaps you could give your readers, JoeBucksFan.com, and our listeners here on the Scuttlebucks, that we should look out for the game against the Panthers?
Well, the thing that's interesting to me is the Bucks in the last couple weeks have signed two tackles. They got rid of Caleb Benenuk. So I wonder if maybe the hierarchy at One Buck Palace is starting to wonder if Dotson is, if Father Time is caught up with Dotson. He looked kind of slow out there Sunday. Looked kind of slow. And I don't know if they got these guys, the anticipation, one being a guy who started five games for the Jaguars last year. I don't know if there's some anticipation that, you know, maybe Dotson's on a quick hook. I don't know that. I wouldn't be surprised if they go to the running game. What surprised me more than anything, Arians raved about Ronald Jones, and obviously he had a nice game, but yet Ronald Jones isn't starting. Peyton Barber is starting. That was a little bit confusing. You know, Arians was talking about, oh, we got to go with the hot hand. We have to go with the hot hand. Well, the hot hand right now is Ronald Jones. Why isn't he starting? So, but no, it's such a quick turnaround. There's really not much of a change. And I guess that's good in a way because they couldn't dwell on that loss. They had to look ahead to the Panthers. And the big thing now is Gerald McCoy. And Gerald McCoy had all of one tackle against the Rams. So maybe the Bucks did do the right thing and let him go at the right time.
Well, they certainly did. You always hate to see things end acrimoniously, but they certainly made the right move there. But all right, well, we'll watch. We'll talk again next week. And enjoy the football, brother. Hopefully we'll be talking after a win next time.
Let's hope so, Jeff, and thanks as always. I appreciate your cooperation and your time.
Absolutely, brother. Be good. That's Lee DeKipper, JoeBucksFan.com. And real quick, listen, we do tend to overreact after 1 week, and I remind myself of that when I'm frustrated. I was very frustrated on Sunday. I thought this was a game they could have won. They had opportunities down there in the red zone. And Jameis has to play better. It's less about the turnovers, although that's all anybody ever focuses on. Again, I didn't blame him in the game for two of those turnovers. One of those, which happened to be the most crucial, was the one at the end that is, you just can't happen. But even if you remove those, Tom, and you can't, he didn't play well, you know, throughout the course of the game. I thought he was erratic, was the right word for Jameis in this game. Missed some throws that he's got to make. Guys weren't open. They got to get open. That's true. I think they will. I think you'll see this team play better. I'm just curious, will it be on Thursday?
I don't know. That's really of course, you have a quick turnaround after your first week under a new coach. And you're going on the road for that short week, and you're going against another good defense. And I'll reiterate what I said in the first segment. If you look at the splits from what the Rams did on offense this past weekend, yards per attempt are about the same for the quarterback. They did more damage in the ground, or on the ground, I should say. And what they really did, Todd Gurley didn't show up until the second half, late third quarter, early fourth quarter.
He's still not right.
But they put Carolina on ice with the ground game late. And I find that interesting. Also, another number from this past game on the flip side is that Cam Newton only had 3 rushing attempts for -2 yards. They are protecting him early. We'll see if they protect him on a short week, though.
Can we get, you know, obviously, can we do something to slow down McCaffrey? Seems to me if that happens, Cam's not going to run around.
Even still, like if he has 150 or 175 all-purpose yards, based on how many touches he gets, that might be a win, you know, because the total output of that is, all right, you let McCaffrey get his.
Do his thing. And
if Cam doesn't
anything,
beat you with his legs, then you might be in business.
Come back, wrap it up momentarily on the Scuttlebucks.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
You know, one of the things that did stand out in a real positive way above and beyond the fine performance that we got from Ronald Jones, who looked like, well, he looked like the guy we saw at Southern Cal. He looked like a guy who could absolutely play with confidence and explosiveness, and he was good. He was really good in this game.
When we were doing draft prep and we were talking on the eve of the draft, I was like, man, I like this guy's tape. If you're looking at that second round level, you're not going to get somebody at the top elite scouting grades, but if you're looking for a sleeper, Ronald Jones was that guy, and I felt all last season, like, wow, the tape lied to me. But it looks like he's got a lot more toughness and confidence at the same time, and that's good that they go hand in hand.
Ran with authority and explosiveness and wanted the ball. You could tell that. He really did. I mean, you think about him just knocking out runs there in important situations. He did. He put together several 11, 13, 17, 9 yard
Well, the
runs.
Vision on the one that's it's blown up late in the game, he cuts back, makes a couple guys miss, and I think it's only 5 or 6 yards, but you just see the natural athleticism and the instinct take over, and that's the key. You got to have the instinct to go with the skill at this speed. But we did a really good job early in the game of creating cutback opportunities for him as well. We outflanked the defensive front for San Francisco pretty well, which means what? You installed a competent game plan, and you develop players to attack that game plan and succeed on Sunday. There's a lot more competence across the board. I feel like the floor is being raised, even though this is a result that we're all too familiar with.
Well, and flip it to the other side of the ball. We got to praise that defense that played exceptionally well and had moments where they looked all right, downright dominant. And listen, I know they only sacked Garoppolo once on Sunday, but they rattled him. They covered well. They came up and tackled well. They'll get opportunities against Cam Newton. Carolina's offensive line is not good, and I do think that you know, you look at Newton. You brought it up during the break. He really, all right, maybe even on the air there, he didn't really run around much.
No, three attempts, negative 2 yards. That's wow.
Well, and that's also a classic Norv Turner. You know, he keeps quarterbacks in the pocket and throws the ball. So, you know, I mean, that makes sense there.
This isn't the guy you want to do that with. But, you know,
if he's got a beat-up shoulder, it is.
I know, but if you look at the numbers, too, the downfield shots, and I know I'm tempting fate because I'm sure on the first drive they'll hit one. The longest completion for Cam this past weekend was 17 yards.
Beautiful.
I mean, and that offense is designed to get you going, well, at least it used to be, left and right, back right to left, and then the next thing you know, there's somebody up the seams for a 40 or 50-yard play because his arm and the speed that they have.
Todd Bowles will probably dial up the pressure in this game. He has opportunities here. I think that, you know, this is a game where you can get after the quarterback. And I don't know, you know, it was interesting listening to Lee a moment ago while we're talking about this defense. I think he's referring to Devin White in the locker room. I think Devin White, first of all, played well when he had 6 tackles. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I think loves the game of football. And he's a rookie, and he's just giddy to be out there. He'll learn in time that you can't be smiling in the locker room after losses. But he's I like that kid.
He's got some makeup speed, too. There's a play in the second half where San Francisco, I think they break off an 8 or a 10-yard run. And you have a linebacker to his right blowing up the gap that he's supposed to, and Devin is shifted over by one gap to the left towards the center. And Devin still gets his hands on the running back. He actually gets stiff-armed in the play, so he looks poor, and you think, oh, God, there goes our first-round pick getting stiff-armed. Well, that wasn't a play that he should even be in a position to make and clean up, but the fact that he can get there with that speed tells me that when his instincts take over and the game slows down for him, he's going to be cleaning up a lot of plays and a lot of messes for the dudes up front and his segment mates as his career goes on. There's a lot I like about Devin White from Sunday's film.
Yes.
And the other thing is 93, the new 93, making plays in the defensive backfield, pursuing, blowing up the point of attack on third and shorts. And Ndamukong Suh was invested on Sunday, and he made some big-time plays.
And let's hope that continues, because I think they, again, have a chance to get after Cam Newton. He's going to be in that pocket for most of this game. We know the offense runs through Christian McCaffrey. Yes, obviously, we know about Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore and other guys like that, but to me, I mean, this is basically an offense that centers around Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey. And if you can get to him, you got an opportunity, really, I think, to make this a one-dimensional team.
Well, I like that we weren't hapless in third down and short or short yards in general.
That first stop on third down, I almost fell to my knees and wept. I hadn't seen that in forever.
I kind of did. I had a bit of a tear.
Look at that. We got to stop on third down. And then we did it again and again.
If 93 is invested, and this is where you can't go 1-3. Like, you know,
you got to keep him invested. Yeah.
He's on a one-year deal, but it matters greatly to him what the results are, I do believe. But you put him and a healthy Vita together, and Vita's getting his sea legs underneath him. All right. There's a lot of pieces on this defense that give me hope. And I'll be honest, if the receivers can do a little bit better job of getting open, Jameis didn't play well. I'll come back to it. He didn't play well. But if the worry is that Jameis isn't producing, I feel a lot better than if the worry is we can't cover anybody ever.
Right, right. Well, no, yes. On defense last year, it didn't matter. We went into games, and I'd say, it doesn't matter if Jameis plays well or he plays poorly. We're not going to get stops. It won't matter. We're not going to get stops. Now I have hope that we're going to get stops. Now I have hope that Jameis doesn't have to win the game on his own, that it, you know, he's not going to have to throw for 370 yards for us to win. You could run the ball. That could be the focal point of your offense. You could throw off a play action. He could actually have like a prototypical mid-level quarterback in the NFL game. Throw for 230. Try to avoid some interceptions there, Jameis. You know, let's run the ball well over 100 yards for a Ronald Jones and get the ball to your playmakers and execute in the red zone. Just a simple, straightforward approach to winning football.
I think it'll be interesting to see if Peyton starts slow, how quickly we go to Ronald Jones.
Well, you know that having seen Ronald Jones look the way he did, I don't really need to see Peyton Barber all that much other than for a respite.
Well, one other note on Arians, too. When Jameis made the comment earlier in the week about guys need to get open, he's parroting his head coach. Again, I know you don't want him to say that in the situation
Off of the performance. I just thought it was interesting. It shows me he was really, really frustrated.
But I think Bruce was frustrated with that as well. And maybe we are getting to a place where, as long as Jameis puts it on himself as well, because Bruce Arians is willing to call everybody out in film.
Anybody.
Maybe that's just going to be the nature of the team.
Which is
people they're going to hold each other accountable to the public and private, and screw you because you're supposed to do your job.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Early in the game, I had my eyes on Evans because we all knew he was a game-time decision based on illness and that he had been really, really sick. So I thought, okay, is this just a guy giving it a go? Because he is tough, and I like Mike a lot. Obviously, he's a dynamic player.
Should be noted, too, that Devin was sick. Got tonsillitis, and he's playing. So back to Mike Evans, though.
So I'm watching that, and he's getting no separation. He looks exhausted in the first quarter. You kind of got to look at it like you played that game without your best player on offense. I mean, you did. You kind of played a game without Mike Evans.
Sure.
I mean, it really wasn't Mike Evans.
But the problem is that offense is designed to get Godwin open more. And he was open in some spaces that we didn't hit him, and we got him in a couple of huge plays.
That's part that I was talking about.
Perryman needs to be open a little bit. I mean, with the speed he's got, we got to get out of our breaks a little bit here. And if OJ's going to be lost mentally, then you do have to go back to Cam Brate in the short term.
I guess so. He can get blown up in the red zone with the best of them. He'll hold on to the ball.
I can guarantee that.
My man, let me do this. Let's get it out there. We're not in the prediction game every week on the Scuttlebucks. The Bucks go on the road and they get a hard-fought win, buddy. Ooh. I'm going with a little 23-20 action.
Yeah.
A little 23-20 action on the road.
Yeah, I didn't look at the over-under, but I feel like the total should be pretty low for a couple of reasons. Yeah. Fatigue, because you haven't played a full game yet.
And that's one thing that makes it hard to make predictions, because sloppy play is probably going to be.
Right. The fact that you haven't played even more in the Bucks' case than a half. Right. Or I don't even know if they play the whole first half with the first team. And so now you get your first full game action and you got to play again on a Thursday. It's brutal. Same thing with Carolina. But if you look at the way the two defenses played last week, I understand that L.A. touched in the 30s. But one of those is a short field off a Cam Newton turnover.
Yep.
This game should be rather low scoring.
I think it's going to be physical as hell.
Unless they're a fatigue coverage bust or something like that.
I think it's a physical, hard-nosed, running game against running game. They're going to attempt to pound it. We're going to attempt to pound it. And I pretty much think that's what's going to go on right there. You want the surplus? You want to get into getting the goods for everybody at Bill Curry Ford? I think we should. Our friends at Bill Curry Ford are, again, not only collecting post-hurricane supplies for residents of the Bahamas at the dealership, they are also ensuring that the relief supplies will get on a flight directly to the Bahamas to help meet the tremendous need that's there. We all know about this. Just a devastating scene. So drop off a donation. Do so by September the 16th at Bill Curry Ford, 5815 North Dale Mabry Highway, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. It's easy. All you got to do is toss it in the back of their big F-150 that's all set up for donations in the Bill Curry showroom there. Sunscreen, trash bags, non-perishable food, a full list. It's all posted on JoeBucksFan.com. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for nearly 60 years. Tom Lang, you got to win in the game or no?
I don't know. It's
okay, just say no then.
I don't know. I would love to be 1-1 on the Scuttlebucks next week.
Woo!
We need wins in our life.
Wins.
We need wins in our life in Tallahassee.
The worst kind of way. We need them badly. I'll take the Bucks in a hard-fought nail-biter 23-20. Like I said,
I want to see how the receivers look. I'll be honest. I know. Jameis is the key. I get it, and I'm not trying to deflect.
No.
But you got to get open for him.
Do. Catch the ball when it's thrown to you.
Because
I would
bet Carolina defensively is going to come up and challenge against the run and force the receivers to prove that they can get open early based upon last week's film.
Big game for Mike Evans if he's healthy.
It's a big game, too, for MJ Stewart. He was the lone guy who got burned, and he had a really good preseason, but that was something schemed up beautifully by Shanahan for a shot play up the left-hand side. I do want to see if Carolina has any tricks for us up their sleeve because we covered mostly well, but 36 was one that got exposed.
All right, till next time, go Bucks, and we'll talk to you next week. And hopefully we're talking about a 1-1 Buccaneer football team. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks.
Yeah!